podcasting is one of the coolest ways to learn about people and things like that, but I also value the opportunity to be able to connect and things like Speak It Forward, you know, but even podcast movement, to be able to have those opportunities. I think it's not even just about the information. It's the opportunity to connect and meet real people doing real things. So rather than just sit there talking about things we can't control, I value people doing stuff.
Okay, welcome to Star of the Doubts. I'm your host, Jared Easley, and today I've got with me guest Tony Elam at TonyElam.com. Tony, this is long overdue. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start out by just talking about how we met. I think that's an interesting story. You and I met a few years back, so I'll let you tell your version of it.
Well, it's been a few years. I know it was at Kent Julian's boot camp, and I think you were extremely impressed with me.
Of course.
My ability to communicate and tell stories and speak things forward, I think.
All of which is true.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So we did. We met at Kent Julian's event up in Atlanta a few years back. And I look back now and I realize, you know, the biggest takeaway for me from that event was connecting with good people like yourself. Because now, a few years later, we're still friends. We're still encouraging one another and helping each other. And, you know, I can't say that some of the takeaways from the training of the event have applied to what I do, but definitely the connections have been worthwhile.
Yeah, he fostered a real good environment. And, you know, those connections were paramount to shaping my thinking and how I move forward with everything I do, not only online, but just in business in general.
Now, Tony, you're not originally from Central Florida. You live in Central Florida now. Let's go back to the beginning. Let's talk about where you're from.
I am from Muncie, Indiana. A lot of great people were produced from there. You think of Garfield, you might think of Muncie, Indiana. You think of Dave Letterman.
I do think of Dave Letterman. Yep.
Yeah. You think if I say my next guest is, you know, you might think Muncie, Indiana, Ball State, you know, those sort of things. So, but I was just a few miles outside of there. I was disconnected from Muncie for most of my life. I'm from a place called Selma, Indiana, where the corn grows. And, you know, I didn't have internet or cable. I had a bike and, you know, just the open road and a few creeks and just no kids, but a bunch of about 15, 60-year-old neighbors. And, you know, I had myself to entertain. That's kind of how I grew up. And then I was bused into school. And when the computers came along, I was in heaven. So I learned how to, I hung out on video games, computers, and basketball.
That's interesting. I want to talk about your childhood just for a moment, because I think you and I have that in common. I grew up somewhat similar, not having cable. Going outside really was what you did. And playing, whether it was with a neighbor, I guess in your case, not with the neighbors, but just going out and playing. Was your family kind of like be home when the street light comes on kind of thing? Or
my dad worked at Chrysler in a factory, and my mom worked at a radiology billing office. She was home when I was by myself for a little while, and my dad worked all kinds of shifts. So he worked double shifts and things. So, you know, but he was home on the weekends and went fishing, did stuff like that. But I was with my mom a lot. Then my brother came along when I was older. So he'd just kind of hung out with my mom. We got home, and my dad took over on the weekends and, you know, made sure I had projects to do and ditches to dig and lawns to mow and all that kind of stuff.
What's the age difference between you and your brother?
6 years.
6 years, okay. Now, in retrospect, you consider your upbringing and some of those things that now are almost foreign now. Like, I can't imagine children, at least, you know, my daughter is not growing up the same way I grew up. It was just different offerings, different opportunities, but we live in a different place. So I was wondering, when you look back on your childhood, what are some things in that period of your life that translate or have kind of set you up for what you do now, if anything?
Yeah, in some ways I was split for a long time. I really kind of railed against my dad on technology because he was always wanting me to go outside and play, you know, do things. And I was always wanting to write code and do all these things that I'm naturally made to do in some ways, which I don't really apply to my, in some ways I apply to my job, but I'm not, you know, my job looks very different today than it did when I was a kid, but the aptitude of the things I do are very similar. But then the ability to think for myself on fixing my car or things that he taught me to do, I appreciate more now than I did. And so I don't know, we both have girls, and you know, I try to factor some of that in. I want them to appreciate some of the things, that to be able to think for themselves. But then at the same time, I know that what they'll be doing 20 years from now will be vastly different than what I can even comprehend, probably.
Oh, no, there's so much truth to that. So, Tony, you didn't always stay in Muncie, Indiana. So let's talk about the transition. You realize there's a bigger world out there. So let's talk about that chapter.
Well, I attempted to move twice. When my outlook is, I didn't go to college. I've made poor grades. I kind of always thought of myself as a smart guy, mainly because my teachers told me I was smart, but I just didn't apply myself. And so I kind of believed them. You know, what else was my alternative? You know, believe that I was dumb. So they told me I was smart, but I just needed to apply myself. I just didn't know why. But then my dad said, I'll pay for your college. He worked at a factory, 60 hours, 80 hours a week sometimes. But you have to go to Ball State. And I didn't want to go to Ball State. And I really just hated school. Why would I take your money and, you know, fail in college when I didn't do that well in high school? So I just kind of went my own way, and I tried to move to North Carolina because after a while I worked at Walmart. I worked at a Ford dealership, and I worked at a Dodge dealership selling cars. And I kind of like people, and I kind of like customer service. After a while, I sold appliances. I sold Kirby vacuum cleaners when I first got out of high school.
Really?
I kind of bounced around. Yeah. My dad told me to go get a real job. I stacked boxes.
Were you successful at the Kirby factory? Huh? Vacuum sales?
No, I guess the point of Kirby vacuum cleaners is to only clean one spot on the floor really well. And I would go into this old lady's house and clean the whole floor because I just didn't seem right to leave a clean spot and a dirty floor, because those are pretty good vacuum cleaners. So you're supposed to sell the idea and then leave them with a clean spot so they had to look at it. And then you'd bring in a closer, you know, and really like nail them with a $1,600. And then we'd walk out with some. I'd end up selling it to them for like $300 because I had ended up spending the whole day with them, and they just felt so bad that they couldn't sell it even for $800. It was kind of a weird thing. And I'd spent all my graduation money and all this other stuff. And so my dad said, why don't you go get a job with your grandpa over stacking potato chips? And, you know, so over a while, I was like, well, I got to get out of here because there's no jobs. And I went to another place with no jobs. It was Havelock, North Carolina. But it had a beach. So I was kind of in love with that for a while. Mm. And I saw other opportunities. And then I came back home for a while. And then I knew one person when I moved to Orlando. And he said, well, if the opportunities in Central Florida are at Disney, and you want to get a tipped position, and you want to be like a bellman or dining, you know, service, but you're probably going to start out hot dogs, selling like food and beverage or something. And I waited about 3 weeks, and I said, well, I probably should get a job.
And, so you had moved, and then...
Yeah, but I had a ton of debt. I had, like, okay. I had, because I was in sales making pretty good money, but I just knew I didn't want to do that. Going from like a sales position to Disney, where they pay you like 13 cents an hour to working 80 hours a week, I just couldn't keep up with my debt. But I liked working there. It was fun because I knew I met a lot of people from all over the place. They were a lot of fun. But I didn't have any money. I just went broke quick. Yeah, it was just kind of, but I was going to the beach. I was hanging out at the alehouse. You know, it was great.
You were living the dream.
Oh man, I was living La Vida Loca, you know, but I had not a single dime to my name.
Well, okay. So I know that not being in debt is something that's very important to you now. So much so that in the past, that's actually been something you've helped other people with. So you mentioned you were in debt. Let's talk about how that realization came about. Like, hey, I don't want to be in debt anymore, and I'm going to do my best to climb out of this.
So I'm fundamentally like, I try things, you know, and from flipping cars to like, no, I was, besides just getting jobs, I was flipping cars in Indiana, and you know, I'd buy a $600 car and I'd fix it up one way or another. But then I would borrow money on cars too. And I filed bankruptcy when I was 20, you know,
bankruptcy at 20.
Mainly because I got in a little bit of trouble and my dad didn't know a lot about the laws. And he said, I don't want you to get in any serious trouble. And I just was kind of looking for an easy way out. And I just said, okay, yeah, I was really willing to get like knuckle down and pay my, like, my dad never been in financial trouble. And, but he was like, if he was saying, I was like, okay, I'll do it. And I paid like $600 before the laws were any different. I'm 42 now. So, and I, you know, I said, okay, I'll just do it, you know, cause I was just completely irresponsible and, you know, writing bad checks and just total lack of integrity. And, but I, it was more irresponsibility. Then, but the integrity or not thinking about what other people and what I was doing, you know, I was just thinking about, I want that car, you know, and I wouldn't worry about how I was going to pay for it. And, I wouldn't, how to manage my money or anything like that. And, so when I came down to Florida, it just compounded, but I filed bankruptcy early. And then when I was 20, by the time I was 27, I found myself almost in that position again. And, but I, and, you know, obviously I didn't go to my parents because I was down here. Part of the thing about being down here was the ability to think for myself, because in this irresponsibility story, I'm telling you, some of it was about getting away. I had a lot of arguments with my dad, you know, a lot of like, he was telling me everything to do. And I just wanted to prove a lot of stuff, you know, and so I just wanted to be on my own and live my own life. And I knew everything and, you know, he knew a few things in my mind, but I wanted to go just do my own thing. And, but by the time I'm a little slow. So by the time in some areas, so by the time I hit 27, I thought maybe it's me. And instead of filing bankruptcy, I just had reached a point where I said, you know what? I don't care how delinquent these debts are. And even though my car had been repossessed, I'm living in a 35-foot travel trailer that I paid $1,000 for. Literally, I'm getting rained on when I sleep.
Oh, man.
I had an $800 Chevy Cavalier. I got fired from Disney. I'm miserable. And I said, you know, it's me. This is how people end up homeless. And, you know, not, I don't know everyone's path to homelessness, but I said, maybe this is how people end up homeless, you know, and I got to do something. And I said, I'm going to move back home. That was my mindset. And a guy from Philly, a friend of mine that I've known for a long time, he said, I thought you didn't like living in Indiana. And I said, I don't, I like it here, you know, and he goes, well, when are you going to grow up?
Well, that might have been a little bit hard to hear, I guess.
But. Well, that's what I needed to hear, honestly. That's what happened. Yeah. He had bought my dinner too. He had bought me Chinese food, and we don't have very many good Chinese places in Indiana also. And he doesn't usually buy me dinner. And man, it just kind of nailed me right between the eyes and at the right time. You know, he doesn't usually give his opinion on stuff like that too often. He goes, if you want to tuck your tail between your legs and move home, then go ahead. And if you want to grow up and live where you want to live, then handle it. You know, and I knew that was the right advice.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that's kind of maybe harsher than what you were expecting to hear, but I started handling it. I got a job. That's how I started working at Gaylord.
It was the truth.
Yeah. And it was right for me anyway.
Yeah.
And I got a job at Gaylord Palms. I paid back an $8,000 debt. I negotiated some of it, honestly, an $8,000 debt. On a car that I didn't own, which a lot of people told me I was crazy on. I paid back all the delinquent credit cards, and it had nothing to do with whether I should or shouldn't, like from a, but I negotiated some of it. So I learned a lot about that. And then I got married later on, inherited my wife's debt, and I felt like it was going to take 10 years to repay this. And even though I was by right, I should have taken 10 years because of all the stupidity in my mind. That's when I discovered the Dave Ramsey stuff. And, you know, I'd listened to all kinds of people, Clark Howard, Susie Orman, Rick Edelman. I listened to all these people. It doesn't really matter who it is. It's really more, you got to have a personal reason and to live any kind of lifestyle. It's got to be for you, whether it's losing weight or financial or going to the moon or whatever. You've got to believe it, because I'm kind of a cynical person in some ways. I'm optimistic and kind of like, I don't think they're going to win at that, because they don't seem to believe it. And so when I believed it, and when I heard the run like a gazelle, you got to run. It's, you know, and kind of that personal accountability story, and also the benevolence stuff that he talks about, like giving to cops and giving, you know, the kids who need bikes. I said, yeah, this is, I can do that. And we ended up, instead of taking 10 years, we paid off $26,500 in 15 months.
Wow. And that's getting pretty serious.
Yeah. So I started teaching it, you know, for a while, just out of, And I don't even do this now. So like you and I just having a conversation. I don't do this for a living. I just, you know, I do
giving back.
I do websites.
Yeah.
I haven't for a long time in our church. I taught financial peace just almost more for me, just as a way of accountability, because before I couldn't write a checkbook. You know, I couldn't manage a checkbook. I just taught it to teach others. It's funny how people view you as such an expert or a guru just because you get on a stage and say, this is how you do something, you know, and I would tell people, this is my history. You can do it too. And I've witnessed a lot of gung-ho people who start out really well and a lot of slow starters and people. And, you know, they think it's about the budget or they think it's about some slog of a thing you've got to do. And, you know, I'd say, you know, a simple budget will outperform a world-class budget anytime if you believe it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You just got to have your reasons, and you got to be, if you're married, you got to even more be on the same page with your spouse. But if I can do it, you know, if I can, you know, it's, I don't even make a lot of money, but just keeping things simple and kind of having a plan makes things go so much further. And, you know, if you make a lot of money and you don't have a plan, you're still going to feel broke, whether it's $500 a month or $1 million a month. You're going to be like, why am I like this? You know, and you're just going to look better doing it. You know, there's so many people. I coached people individually for a long time, and I'd walk into these massive houses with like these big columns and pillars and people you would never think were broke. And they'd have like $500 in the bank account. And I was, you know, being a little like corn-fed Indiana boy, you know, who lived out in the middle of nowhere, I would have thought these people were rich. You know, I would have thought everyone down here just kind of looks like fabulous. And so I'm easily impressed, but I've still got a long way to go. I don't know how, you know, I've still got to figure out career. Because I goofed around so long when I was young, I'm not trying to fool anyone. You know, I still think I have a lot of things to learn, and I have a lot to offer, you know, kind of, but in a world where so many people, you don't know where you stand because they're trying to hide so much. I'm not really trying to hide anything. I'm trying to, you know, maybe protect my family and be careful who I work with and associate with. But other than that, I'm not really trying to do anything but offer, you know, good advice to anyone who needs it.
You mentioned working for Gaylord Palms. Eventually, you transitioned from that into being a business owner. So let's hear about that story.
Yeah, so I if any mistake I made there, I worked there 10 years. I kind of, at the beginning of that, that was like a get a job and be secure, stable, because I had bounced around to so many jobs, and it was about healthcare. And
well, then you were focused on paying off debt there for a season.
Yeah, and I'm naturally a learner and trying things, and so I was kind of ahead of the curve on learning about podcasting and going to, you know, I started going to Speak It Forward and things like that. I decided I need to start learning a skill. And but, you know, if any mistake I made there is not just getting out of there soon enough. I got comfortable, got to a point. But, you know, I got married, I was having kids, and, you know, my wife's a lot more conservative than I am. You know, once you've been in a trailer with rain on your head, you know, and you're already kind of a risk taker already, it doesn't get a whole lot worse than that. I mean, I'm sure it can get worse. It's not what I'm saying, but I could sleep in my car is what I'm saying, but I don't want my family. You know, I'm sure my wife and kids don't want to do that. So
yeah, I
take heed and listen to my wife is what I'm saying. And yeah. So I stayed there a little longer. And, you know, but I'm kind of idealistic, and I think, okay, this is going to work, I think. But at the same time, I stayed there and I ended up just getting comfortable because I'm in my 40s and I wanted to have a good time and enjoy the money. But then it actually started going down. The money, people, conventions started changing the way they do things and the, what we call porterage and things like that. So, you know, I eventually just made the leap, and I found out so many people who have marketing degrees and things like that aren't really good marketers. And so I had been acquiring all this marketing knowledge and things like that. And my first interview came from a referral. A friend of mine was working and he goes, actually, you're a pretty good source of training for me. Maybe you should talk to my boss. And I got my first job off of, he interviewed me at an IHOP in Claremont. And he said, yeah, I think you'd be good here. And I ended up writing a lot of their training manuals and stuff for their clients. I managed like 60 clients, onboard training for new clients. And It was marketing for insurance agents. And then I would, you know, again, just my nature to try things that I would get frustrated at the website guys, and I didn't know any CSS or HTML, and it would take 2 weeks just to move a logo, and that didn't seem acceptable to me. So
yeah,
I started teaching myself how to use HTML, CSS, and then eventually learned WordPress. And I was kind of focused at the time on, and still helping people with finances. So I wrote a book on how not to be a, you know, how to not file bankruptcy nearly twice.
Is that book in Amazon?
No, I took it out.
Took it out?
Yeah, I probably should put it back up. But
yeah, why not?
It was kind of linked to a website I had up, and it didn't seem relevant. And But
you're probably the only author I've ever met that's taken their book out of Amazon.
Yeah, well, it actually sold for a while. It did pretty well.
I'd put it back.
It linked back to the website. I just didn't want to manage it and stuff. So, but it did pretty. It wasn't like a New York Times bestseller or a big seller, but it got pretty regular sales. So.
Well, what do you say? You just didn't want to manage it. What is there to manage? I mean, if a book's on Amazon, that's
well. Most people are just they write a book and they put it up and they expect it to just to sell. I early on figured out the book was because I listened to Dan Miller. You know, and he understood. I mean, it depends on your outlook, I guess. But I took his kind of view early on because when I was being a Dave Ramsey guy, I automatically saw. I took a business course. Let me back up a little bit. I took a business course from a guy named Justin Lukasavage, and I just started seeing this natural progression from, you know, the guy on the mountaintop who was Dave Ramsey, and for this natural awareness. Whenever you're not aware of how a world works, let's say anything you do. Say you've never heard of skiing before, and so you start Googling skiing, you'll start learning all these terms and all these things, and then there are people who already know about skiing, so they're Googling a certain brand name of skis and all these things, and so those are your people who are already aware, and then there are people who are not aware, and so they're at different stages of the game. So when I was well aware of Dave Ramsey, I started becoming aware later of Dan Miller, and then all these subsets of people in my own, what I would call little world of entrepreneurs and, you know, podcasters and all these things. And you start searching for different things. So when I had put this book up, I didn't put it up to make sales, really. I put it up to make people aware of who I was. And I put it up to make them aware of there was more offerings. And my goal was to help people. And, you know, I made a podcast and I went a little too broad. It was called Finding Forward Motion. I was thinking like Zig Ziglar type level. You know, I wanted to help people just move forward because I had made so much progress. I had links in there and, you know, there was not near as much support like there is today. And when I started, I went from this sort of, loose business model in a motivational type business. And I couldn't figure out how to make money in it to a very pragmatic marketing world, helping people in insurance agents. It was completely opposite end of the spectrum. If that makes sense. I don't know if it to very business minded people. And I said, I don't know where I'm going with this. And I just pulled it all down.
Okay. That kind of makes sense when you're
probably some of my insecurities.
Well, I want to ask you a question about for someone who's feeling like they're in a, I'm going to use the word dead end job. It might not be a dead end job, but just something they're not excited about, but they're maybe interested in starting a new career or starting maybe their own thing. What advice do you have for that person?
Starting a new career, I'd say kind of ride the balance between staying humble but think big at the same time. You know, I mean, you got to stay realistic about where you're at and make progression. Be deliberate about your growth. So, you know, you can do something for 10 years and never get better at it. You know, just because you do something over and over doesn't mean you're going to get better at it. I could walk around a golf course for 10 years and never get better. But if I'm deliberately trying to get better at, you know, maybe putting, or if I'm trying to get better at, you know, my golf swing for, you know, off the tee, then I'll get better. And yeah, same thing goes in your career. And then obviously I'm going to say, if you're focused on your career, don't make a lot of commitments while you're young in terms of finances. Don't think about the car. Don't think about or pay cash for it. You know, I mean, if you have to have a car, you know, pay cash for it. Don't make it to where you can't get out of it. And so if it's your business, if you want a nice car, I'm not going to judge you, but to be honest with you, I'm not a fiscally conservative person. I've only done it because I need to be at this stage in the game. I've made that decision. But if I had all my priorities in a row. I was giving like I want to be giving. If I had my family taken care of and I still had so much excess, I'd have about 20 cars. I mean, I just, you know, I like cars. I like stuff, but I'd rather just take care of my family first. And so it's not really that big a deal in my life anymore. But I tell you, if you're making your career a priority and you're young, a lot of these things can be distractions and they're not, you can only do so much in a day and you don't know what those limits are. You need to figure out what your limits are and make sure you're putting that priority first.
True. So, Tony, we'll start to wrap up here. You didn't spend a lot of time talking about this, but you do help people with marketing and stuff. What is it that your business offers now, and then where can people check that out?
Yeah, so I've pretty much learned all the different trades in marketing, but I'm starting to dwindle it down to helping people make content for their websites. I usually end up just building the websites at first for them, because most of the people I meet need to upgrade their websites, but then I focus on making great content, and a lot of the people I work with are experts in their industry. They already have a good sales message. They already have it worked out with the clients they meet or the team they work with. And then I can make, you know, help them with making video content and what order to say it in and, you know, how to use the camera to make that video. So it's been a process for me to get there, but that's what I'm focused on right now.
And where do people check you out?
You go to fitdigitalmarketing.com.
What was it?
FIT.
Fitdigitalmarketing.com.
Fitdigitalmarketing.com.
Okay. I want you to tell a story from when you're a bellhop and someone stiffed you.
You know, where they stiffed me.
Celebrity.
Well.
Name names.
Yeah. A lot of them are pretty simple. I've had a lot of celebrities are pretty good. Warren Sapp stiffed me. There's no story with it though. He just said, set him right there and I got out. I got a little bit of a, and I mean, I didn't get stiff, but Bill Cosby, I don't know if that's a good one now. Or, you know, he gave me $5 though.
Bill Cosby gave you $5.
Yeah.
It was better than nothing.
I think a better story is not the one of stiff, but, I got $100 for bringing an ashtray to, Dante Culpepper.
Wow.
Yeah. And he had no luggage. He signed a $10 million contract and he showed up with no luggage. His girlfriend or wife or whatever, I don't know. And his entourage, you know, he showed up in like I think it was a Ferrari and a couple of other real nice cars behind him. And he paid rack rate is what it's called for one of the Hemingway suites. And, he'd been there prior and I told him, I said, you paid cash. Like he literally paid cash for it. It was like $2,700 and nobody pays that much money for those. You could just walked in and paid $1,500 for that, you know, from my memory. I mean, maybe they do, but just from my experience of working there, I didn't remember anyone paying that. And I don't know. I guess he appreciated that. So, and both of us, I was working late shift. So the guy from Philly I told you about previously, he had gone up with me and he had, the one lady had one tiny little bag. He had went and said it didn't just to be nice in the room. You know, we were just walking and talking and just BSing in the, you know, at the end of the night because it was slow and we were literally going to make no money that night. And he walked out, and the guy from Philly, he was just talking about football and yapping. And I just held up the $100 bill, and he just kind of made a jump and just slapped me, you know, just because he was elated from the $100, you know.
That was your money, though. You didn't have to split it.
We didn't tip pool back then, but I split it with him. We just split everything because $1.50 lunch, so.
And he gave you good advice, Chinese food.
So. Oh, we were full of good advice. But that advice previously was like the best advice. But him and I, we had all kinds of good advice for each other. So,
Tony, I appreciate your time. I love the story and certainly wish you well. Look forward to potentially working with you on my own Start of the Doubts website. So people can stay tuned for
that.
We always like to close out with final thoughts. Tony, final thoughts.
My final thoughts is really, I find it cool for the opportunity to be able to connect like this with you. You know, I really value connection. I think, you know, podcasting is, one of the coolest ways to learn about people and things like that. But I also value the opportunity to be able to connect and, you know, things like, Speak It Forward, you know.
Yeah.
But even podcast movement to be able to have those opportunities. I think it's not even just about the information. It's the opportunity to connect and meet real people doing real thing. I've valued those things in the past so much because those are the forward thinkers, you know, and the people, like-minded thinkers, I guess, you know, things you've heard before probably, but I really value that stuff. So rather than just sit there talking about things we can't control, I value people doing stuff. So that's where I'll leave it, I guess.
Cool. Tony, thank you.